Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily.
Aloha, Mr. Hyde.
And good morning to you, everybody. Staying up late, I would imagine, watching a little hoops on a Tuesday night. We're glad to be here with you on a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. It's an interesting Wednesday. We have a lot to talk about. KU with an interesting, exciting, head-scratching win last night against TCU. We'll get into all of it, including sound from Bill Self after the game, because you guessed it, there were Darren Peterson, wrinkles, additions to the interesting story that has been the beginning of his what should be a short college career. But we'll get into all of it as KU knocks off TCU in overtime, 104-100. So we'll have that for you. We'll get you ready for Shocker and K-State basketball. Sri Islata, our KU insider, will be in to help us with the Jayhawks as well. The transfer portal in college football has been interesting thus far. A lot of movement, a lot of players flipping around. Are we feeling good about anything KU, K-State's doing right now? We'll talk about all that as well. And one of the bigger surprises we've seen in a while in the NFL coaching carousel comes later in the day yesterday. We'll discuss John Harbaugh's firing as well. It's all coming up for you here. What's on tap? Brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, now featuring chili for a limited time. Here, hearty beef, no bean chili, is perfect for lunch and now available at all three WBC locations. East West, Historic Delano, Wichita Brewing Company, pizza and beer made here. TJ, good morning. How are you? Well, you don't have your audio there, TJ. We'll tell you that we have Max Power in there producing, 869-1240. We'll tell you that you can reach out to the show on our video feeds that are at Facebook, YouTube, and X. You can also find us on 12 News Connected, which we always appreciate. You can find us on the Odyssey app, which we always appreciate. You can actually get in touch with us through the Odyssey app. If you're listening to us on the app, if you're listening to us, even if you're listening to us in podcast form and you want to make a point, you can do that. We can get it. You just hit that little microphone button and it'll send us a voice message. And Max has access to those and he can send it back. So we have all of those ways for you to get in touch with us here on the show as we get ready for a big day here, because the topics are plentiful after that KU game last night, 104-100. It's all more interesting than just a comeback KU win, which it was, and it was a big comeback KU win. Make no mistake about it. Darren Peterson, though, checked out of the game very late at a key moment, as he typically does, and everybody's freaking, then was able to return to hit the final three free throws to come and send the game into overtime. He did not play in overtime. There is so much to dig into in that game, TJ, but before we get to a full segment on it after the break here, welcome to this experience. If you're new to this, if you're not, this is just kind of par the course to what this has been like this year.
The only thing that can make it crazier is that my mic cuts out on me in the opening segment of a Hawaiian shirt Wednesday. I'm sorry to take the headline away from that 30 seconds into the show. I would wager to bet that last night was the biggest chapter that we've seen so far in the Darren Peterson saga because of the wildness that it was. I mean, that was it's not the first one, but this is a national televised game, the late primetime window on ESPN, leading into SportsCenter, and you see him, do what has happened. You see the play where he takes himself out and the ball goes by his head is kind of the epitome of what we've seen so far throughout this saga. And then to cap it off, he comes back and ties the game up to send it into overtime. It was really the microcosm of the entire situation that we saw on display last night. And the part that I want to talk to Shreyas about is that it's maddening that if you look up Darren Peterson on social media, nobody's talking. KU fans are talking. KU fans are talking about his availability issues. Everybody else in the country is saying, oh my God, you see how good this guy is at basketball.
Being a part of KU conversations with KU people has been a whole experience this year. And I get it, because it's been an experience for anybody that follows along closely. Like, what are we supposed to do with this? Like, I I knew after last night, I can tell you what, like, the wide ranging emotions of all of this. You have it all. And I think that, you know, we, even some of us here have been there. Are they better without him? Which I think is not true. They should shut him down, which I don't think is the answer either. But they, you know, they were able to cut. What did he checked out? They were down 9, I think, or whatever it was, and they were able to come back. But are they even within 9 if he doesn't score 32 for them? So, like, I think that, I love the discussion, because I think it's one of the more interesting conversations we've ever had. But within that game last night, it was the wide ranging shut him down. They're better without him. You know, all of it within a game is happening.
That's the biggest thing that I can say about it, is if there wasn't 3 free throws made to send it into overtime by Darren Peterson, the conversation at 7 a.m. the next morning would be a lot different. I think maybe not.
I think it's the conversation either way, because you can't be of the camp of like, oh, he's too hard to deal with, they need to shut him down, but because he hit 3 free throws at the end of the game, okay, never mind. Like, you either don't.
I'm just saying it changes the taste in your mouth a lot.
For sure, won the game, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Like, if the game would have ended and they lost by 16 points and he took himself out with 2.5 minutes to go, the conversations would be a lot more of like, man, like, I don't know. Like, what are we doing here, you know? And I mean, Scott Pollard is on Twitter calling out Darren Peterson. Like, we've reached that point.
What were they down when he came out? Around 2
it
minutes?
It was nine.
Yeah. 9, right? So they started. That's the other misnomer, I think, this morning, is that as soon as he came off the floor, they came back. No, they were coming back when he was on the floor.
I mean, they rattled off a 9-0 run as soon as he got off the floor.
Right, though, correct. Too. They finished off the run, but they started the run with him on the floor. What I don't think is fair this morning is to say, as soon as he came out of the game, KU got really good last night, which is what people are trying to do. Like, that's not true. And he scored 32 points in 32 minutes. KU doesn't win that game if he doesn't play. That's where I think the correct answer is to just figure out how to use him when you've got him. And again, we said this yesterday, that is not an easy thing to do or to even comprehend, because it means KU's kind of got to be two different teams. But what if they don't have to be two different teams? That, I think, is
you should go into coaching, Jacob.
Well, no, that's it. Listen, we made this very clear yesterday. It will be one, if Bill Self can figure this out, it'll be one of his great coaching achievements. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not even saying they're going to do it. I'm just saying if they can, that creates the best version of KU. And Bill Self, and we'll play this for you on the other side, Bill Self basically said that last night. Like, everybody's still trying to figure out how to do this thing. So I think it's a little silly to say, oh, just don't even deal with him. They're better without him. Because I don't think that's true at all. I think he's as gifted a college basketball player as we've ever seen. Let's discuss it. We're right up again, so we got a full segment on this. We'll get you some of the Bill Self audio after the game. It's all coming for you here on Sports Daily. Tree Eslada in later to discuss as well. KU, though, gets the overtime win. What a wild experience that was last night. We'll talk about it more next.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily here. Jacob Albrock, TJ Cleveland. Glad to be with you. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up. We need it this morning. KU kept us up late with an overtime game on an 8 o'clock tip. But it was worth it. If you're a KU fan, it was especially worth it. If you're a college basketball fan, you got to see an amazing comeback in one of the, you know, the sport's great venues in great environments. And if you're an observer of all this, just curiously as hell, like I am, it's another interesting chapter in this season. I'll say this at the surface, because I talk to a lot of KU fans because we've lived here now and you just know a bunch. Like the range of emotions on this team is wide. It's as wide as I can remember. I would tell you that this team is more fun than the last couple of years. I don't know if their floor is as high. Their ceiling certainly feels much higher. And it's been a pretty interesting experience this year. I think it's a team that has a real chance, TJ, if they can figure out some really difficult and complicated things, that'll be able to hang with anybody. But I also don't want to like overreact. I mean, I want to overreact to the comeback and how awesome it was. I don't want to overreact to the fact that it was a 4-point home win against TCU either. Like, this doesn't mean like, all right, KU's going on to a natty. Like, as a team, they were pretty heavily favored against, and TCU's not bad, but there's a 4-point win at home against TCU. Like, okay. Like,
I mean, there were 6-point favorites. What are you doing? 20-point favorites.
Well, but I'm talking about if you look in the metrics, I mean, TCU's down in the
field. They should have. I mean, yeah, I think that's a game that you should win.
When you start working through the Big 12, TCU at home is not going to be the most
correct.
Like,
there's going to be harder games for sure.
Most difficult games that you play this year. TCU, I think, is actually pretty impressive. I thought that against Baylor, you know, it was kind of up at the same time on Saturday. Like, they're physical. They've got some really interesting players. I think they've got a chance to be very noisy in the Big 12. But that's not the same as going on the road to Houston or going on the road really anywhere, quite frankly, in the conference. So a lot to figure out still with KU, but it's a hell of a win. It's a hell of a comeback, and it comes in some really interesting fashion. And I don't know what happened. To open up the second half there were two stretches of the game where KU just didn't look very good at all. And there were two stretches of the game where they looked fantastic. And for the Darren Peterson piece, he was kind of a part of both, right? Like he was a part of the comeback at the end of the first half. He was at part of the beginning of the comeback in the second half. So what I don't like is this team is better without him. I think what we have is some of the other players. I don't know if it's gaining confidence or the gaining responsibility, Melvin Council especially. Like I think the ticket is to figure out how do you unlock Melvin Council with Peterson on the floor.
I know that's a hard ask to do, but like that what's the saying, the parts are greater than the sum or something of that nature. Yeah. They have basically the way you break down KU is they have two big parts and they can't fit two squares into the circle hole. You know what I mean?
Offensively, yes.
Yes, exactly. And so I don't know. Keep going back and forth on this of like, are they going to be good enough? Like, if they keep playing this song and dance, what is the ceiling with what they're doing right now? If they shut him down, what is the ceiling with that? Because I honestly think if Darren Peterson didn't play another minute, I think that the KU team is good enough to make a Sweet 16. Ooh. I think they could be.
I think they can be for sure.
In the same breath, like, I think that the Darren Peterson-less Jayhawks have, you know, a lower ceiling and a higher floor, and the Darren Peterson Jayhawks have a lower floor and a higher ceiling.
Yeah, I agree with that. How do you, though, and this, again, because it's not an easy test, but they have half a season still to do it. How do you just raise the floor with Peterson out there, right? We know how high the ceiling is. Here's what's interesting to me, too, and we'll get to Bill Self's comments on this in a second, because he agrees, by the way. Peterson is such a gifted scorer. We can all see that. But it's not like his scoring is like PJ Haggerty's scoring. Right? Like Peterson could be an efficient scorer. He wasn't all that efficient last night, but we've seen him score without taking a ton of shots. So I think the challenge really comes right now to Melvin Council, because Peterson's also, in the time that we've seen him play, a great facilitator. And I also don't want to just gloss over the fact that unless I'm misremembering the game against UCF, UCF started putting it to KU when Peterson left the game. So like, it's not like it's the same thing every time. It's all over the map, which to me makes it even more difficult to try and get a grasp of. There are times when Peterson is on the floor where KU is clearly better, and then when he leaves, the other team puts it to him. There have been times this year where they have played better without him on the floor. Like, it's been everything. It's been everything. And it's been everything, like, recently. It's been everything within single games. So I think trying to oversimplify it too much to say, just shut him down or get rid of him or don't get rid of him, play him all the time. Like, it's got to be a combination of both, which it's going to take till the end of the year to see if they can get this right. Like, at this point, assuming anything other than Peterson's going to play and have to come out of games, foolish, because that is exactly what we've seen every time he's on the floor. How is that not now the expectation?
Yeah.
It's probably going to happen at key moments in games, because the longer he plays, the more likely it is that he's got to come out.
I mean, there's a conversation to be had that, you know, we sat here and talked about 20, 25 minutes and he played 32. And then by the time he got to the 30th minute is when he finally had to come out of the game. He was good up until then. And then, you know, had to call to take himself out of the game basically. And so I don't know how you do it. It's an interesting conversation, and it's an interesting thought. And this is kind of what Scott Pollard was bringing up of like, I understand he's like the best player in college basketball, and so there's a reason why you're letting him do what he's doing. If it was anybody else, you're not going to let him do that though. And I think that's the part that's the most frustrating to face.
See, and I think that's not correct at all. We're looking at this differently than we'd look at it for other players too. What if it was Flory Badunga? What if Flory Badunga was playing through a nagging injury and could only give you 25 minutes a game? You don't think they'd try to get 25 minutes a game out of Flory Badunga?
They would, but then I feel like at a point, if it doesn't happen, like if it happens every game still, like,
better example, what if it's Flory Badunga, highly effective when he's out there, but he just can't stay out there? You think they'd just shut him down? Of course they wouldn't. We're putting Peterson we're asking them to do something with Peterson that we don't ask teams to do with any other player ever. Right? Like, not in basketball anyway. It's an injury that doesn't seem like it's like he's not like hurting himself or anything like that. It's strange. He's good when he's out there. And in my opinion, he makes them better when he's out there. But we want them to just not let him play because he's got an injury that he's willing to try to play through. I think that we don't ever ask a player of that. Like, we don't ever do that with other players. Players play through nagging injuries all the time. That's exactly what he's doing. He's playing through a nagging injury. And people are so aggravated at it, and I don't understand why. Figure out how to be better with him.
Devil's advocate is, if he wasn't playing 25 minutes, he just wouldn't be playing at all. And what would fans' reaction be if he himself just decided, I don't want to play anymore?
I'm cramping, like, guys. I'm going to shut it down.
Oh, what a waste of money. Give us our money back. Why don't you give us our money back?
It's true. But like, my mind goes to the Joel Embiid situation at KU with Bill Self. Like, is it kind of the same thing? And they shut Joel Embiid down, did they not? If I'm remembering right.
I don't remember. I don't either. How much did Embiid have to say about that? Because I think a lot of times you do have camps that are like, whoa, 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 whoa. Nope. This is not worth it for this young man. And that happens. And that's fine, because there is a lot on the line for these young people that most of us can't comprehend, quite frankly. So he's playing through an injury for Kansas. Like, to me, that's like I believe him that is cramping has to take him off. I wish it could be better timed, of course. But to me, I see a young guy who is in that camp of like, he could easily shut this down, and he's not doing it. And he's going out in a game, and he's giving them 32 points in 32 minutes. I think the best solution is to figure out how to best use that. And that's what they're trying to do. And, you know, for all the other players, like, I get it. Like, it's fun to just kind of sit and watch him play. But I also see him be a pretty good facilitator. And I think they can definitely do it better. I think here's the challenge for me. If you're Bill Self, there's no rhyme or reason to exactly when the flare-up happens. So it's hard to prepare for it, right? Like, it would be if the answer was as easy as, well, if we want him at the end of the game, like at 30 minutes, his legs are going to cramp up, right? So at 30 minutes, we'll just time out the 30 minutes. But sometimes it's 23, sometimes it's 27, sometimes it's 30, sometimes it's right at the end of the game and he can't do it. Like, let's play you Bill Self's audio, because this is really interesting. And, you know, I think we get, because of the excitement and how can you be in a bad mood when your team comes back like that, I think we get some real honesty from Bill Self last night. Max has that for us. Max, let's play that and let's let people listen to what Bill Self had to say after the game.
Was I thinking if we were down three when he went out, I could have put him back in? Yeah, but the bottom line is, you know, he started the cramping, or he felt it coming on. So that was his decision to come out, and he would have come out, obviously, unless he had to. But I think for 5 seconds he could suck it up, and we didn't execute it great, but didn't execute it bad, and got the three free throws. But even after he made the free throws, he said, okay, get me out. You know, he's a special talent, but we don't know how to play with him yet, and he doesn't know how to play with the others yet. There's a lot of things that we need to be until we become that, and that is tougher, harder, faster. And we weren't any of those things tonight until the very end.
I think it's perfect. I think it is 100% honesty, and he's right. The issues last night weren't Darren Peterson. They were that the defense sucked too much of that game. For one of the top defenses in the country, by the way, against a not that good offense. Like, that was the issue last night.
My biggest takeaway from what he said last night is, like, where were you thinking about, like, this reminded me, this is a stupid example, but last year's Pop-Tarts Bowl, whatever Cam Ward played in that game, and he played in the first half and then said, all right, I'm not going to play in the second half. I'm done. Like, I didn't want to play. Like, I'm just going to play in the first half and then opt out of the second half. And then they got it down to a one possession game where he could have driven the field and given his team the lead. And he said, no, I'm not playing, guys. I'm not going to the game. And, like, my mind last night was sitting there thinking about, this is a 3-point game. Are they going to put Darren Peterson back in the game, or is he going to say he doesn't want to go back in? And, like, did your brain think about the fact that he could go back in the game, or were you done with him for the night? What do you think?
No, I could. I was watching him. Well, let me give that answer as honestly as I can. So I thought it was a possibility that he could come back out on a possession. The broadcast did a really nice job of continuing to bring that point up and remind us, like, you know, he could come back in and show him on the bit, you know, and he was kind of working those wraps, which are a little bit of a new development. Maybe that'll help get it up to 30-ish minutes. But, you know, he would kind of start to take him off like he wanted to try it. And then obviously the game situation became perfect for, even if he was cramped, like,
cross half court. Yeah.
Right. Like, so it's an inbound play where they have 3 seconds. Like, he just has to be able to get a shot up. I think that there are too many circumstances, and look, it's a product of how good he is. I think we're treating him, and we should, because because he's incredible, but we're treating the situation a little differently than we would. Like, for Bill Self to say, we've got to figure out how to play with him and the other guys, and he's a freshman. That's always the case for freshmen, right? Like, it's January 7th. We haven't even played half a season of his freshman season, and he's played in like 9 games. Of course they still have to figure out how to play with him. He's a freshman. And that, none of that part is unusual to me. It's the unusual part is obviously the timing of the cramps. He's playing through the injury. He's injured. He's playing through the injury. He's playing really well through the injury when he's out there, but because it limits him, everybody else has to figure out, okay, how do we do this? And they have some amazing parts to this team. You said Sweet 16 if he's not there. Yeah, I could probably see it, but but it'd be tough. I think if they figure it out when he's there, if you told me that you're getting 27 minutes a game from him, I would say their ceiling is a national championship, right? Like, I think that's their ceiling. If you can get 27 minutes a game, the challenge will be, okay, how do you get 27 minutes a game? How do you best get 27 minutes a game? And I don't know why there's any reason people think that Melvin Council can't be great at the same time Darren Peterson is great. Of course that can be true. Like, Flory Badunga doesn't need shot volume. They don't need shot volume from anybody else on the floor.
It's true.
So if it's an offense where the volume's coming primarily through Council and Peterson, that's totally normal and fine for college basketball. Great. Yep. That's wonderful. Houston just went to a national championship. I'm not sure more than three guys ever took a shot for that team.
No kidding. I don't think more than three guys ever played for that team.
Right? Like, it's we're treating this differently because he's so good, and it has to be all or nothing. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. It can just be what it is. How do they best utilize the time he's on the floor and the time he's not on the floor? What I want to know is, can they be, and I'll ask Shreyas this, like, can they be the best defensive version of themselves when he is on the floor? That's what I want to know. Like, that's my biggest question. I know they can generate the offense. Council has to be confident both when he's off the floor and on the floor. That part seems easier to me. Can they be the level of defense that's a top defense in the country when Peterson's out there? Because I think that's the next development of this team. Last night's problem was not Peterson. It wasn't when Peterson was on the floor, off the floor. It was that they couldn't stop TCU. TCU was getting way too many easy buckets. That's not a Peterson issue. That's a I don't know what they were thinking issue at their first home game in Big 12 play.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this last night. I got to bring this up before our segment's over here. Matt Norlander, the CBS Sports national basketball guy, national college basketball guy, tweeted out last night the video of, Kevin Nash, the wrestler, in the wheelchair with the cast on. Is that Darren Peterson coming back in the game?
My favorite joke was, you know, it was the fake cramp play from Bill Self. Brilliant, right? Like, he had him right where he wanted him.
Hook, line, and sinker. Go put those wraps on your leg. Totally, we've been building this up all year for the game against TCU.
We've been working on this since October, But it's perfect. It was perfect. And he did, I don't know what, I mean, we're all just guess, like, he did not look comfortable to me when he came back in the game at all. I think the circumstances of him coming out and the optics of it last night sucked. Most of the time, it's a little easier to swallow. It sucked optically last night.
The watch the ball go out of bounds behind his head.
Yeah. So, but at the same time, like, if I'm trying to be like, okay, how does that happen? And then, like, if you've got a cramp, like, we all know what that feels like.
Oh, my gosh. Hold on. I got to bring this up with the minute we have left. Yesterday, we talked about working out, Jacob. Yesterday, I did a workout, and I cramped up so bad, I had to drop to the floor. And I was like, I feel like I'm getting sympathy pains right now.
Cramping hurts. The good news about cramping is it stops, right? Like, that's the beauty of a cramp. We've got some pretty interesting topics, to be quite honest with you, between the KU comeback last night, the trying to make sense of the Darren Peterson time in Kansas, the part of the NFL season that gets, that gets pretty interesting. Normally got a whole lot interesting yesterday, and we've got, you know, the transfer portal, love it or hate it, is eventful. John Harbaugh's firing is as surprising a coaching decision, I think, as I can remember. I'm trying to remember if there's been another one quite as jarring as, like, Andy Reid in Philadelphia. This, to me, by the way, feels exactly like when that happened. A coach who is, the success is unquestioned. The difference is Harbaugh has a Super Bowl, of course, but, you know, where you're getting close and you're not putting it over the edge, and, you know, this was a bad year. Like, if they're gonna do it, probably this would have been the year for the Ravens, because the chances are high that the Ravens are right back in it next year, because that's what we always see with them. So if they felt like a change was needed, okay. And initially, it's like, the Ravens are idiots. They're going to regret this forever. But I will say that I don't think the Eagles regret letting go of Andy Reid, right? They've won two Super Bowls since then. They've been to three. They got better, and he got better, and it was the greatest thing to ever happen to the Chiefs. I think there's at least a chance, let's say it that way, whoever gets John Harbaugh got a gift from the heavens in coaching. And also, maybe he's not the greatest fit for this particular group. Maybe a time for change was there, and this could be the thing that helps him get it over there. I think that could be true.
Yeah.
But man, it's hard to swallow. If I'm a Ravens fan, it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, why? What's going on here?
There was somebody I saw said something. It was after the Stefanski firing, but the same applies for John Harbaugh, even more so. Nothing signifies that it was a good firing quite like every opening wanting to call him and hire him as the next head coach. You know what I mean? Like, did you see the report yesterday that Schefter said that there were 7 NFL teams that reached out within the first 45 minutes, and there's only 6 openings outside of the Ravens. So
now we don't know if they all reached out for him to be their head coach. But
true. Yeah. True. Yeah. I don't know. The other thing too, I don't know if you saw, this is a funny nugget of some NFL meme page on X made a graphic of the Tyler Loop missed field goal. And it was the picture of the uprights. And it was, if the ball went here or here, John Harbaugh got fired. If the ball goes here, Mike Tomlin was getting fired.
Steelers, chaos. There's a section of Steeler fans. The noise has been a lot louder for Mike. I don't remember ever hearing anybody say John Harbaugh needs to be fired. Yeah. And Ian Rappaport had a segment yesterday where he kind of, I think, took people, and I'm reading, you know, so forgive me. I'm reading what Rappaport reported on television as somebody is summating it. I have not watched the segment yet, just to be perfectly honest with people. But the gist of it is that he wanted to just kind of bring everything back. I think some of the players, including Lamar Jackson, weren't on the same page with that strategy. And so for an organization that's really, really smart, I think that they probably could see, like, we have a rift here. Like, you've got, you know, team leadership that's saying this isn't good enough. You've got a coach who's been so good at what he's done for a long time that's saying, no, this is – so I get it. Now, I mean, that, you see that stuff, and it kind of makes sense. And by the way, Baltimore becomes the most attractive job on the market. Whatever happens – I don't know what Derrick Henry's future is, but whatever it is with Lamar Jackson there and some of the pieces they have in place, like, Baltimore instantly becomes the best job to me. So – you've got that aspect of it. Baltimore is going to be able to get a really good coach, and they have Kevin a history of making really good decisions. What name did you say?
Kevin Stefanski to Baltimore.
That'd be interesting. Just that's a coach swap.
That has to be the odds-on favorite. Yeah,
we'd be a coach swap there. Yeah, I mean, you could see something like that. You could see anything because it's the best job on the market. John Harbaugh also becomes the best coach on the market. It's very. It's like a really strange thing. But again, like, I don't know that we've seen it since Andy Reid, where this was like Andy Reid got hired immediately. And so will John Harbaugh, if that's what John Harbaugh wants to do. So John Harbaugh can pick his spot, probably the Giants, I would say. I think the Browns would be the most fun, but it'll probably be the Giants because it's an organization with a lot of stability. And, you know, if you're a coach, you maybe have your quarterback there, but you have enough talent. Like, it's probably going to be the Giants.
Wouldn't you be jacked as a Giants fan to go from all the coaches had to John Harbaugh?
I mean, and look, they gave Dable a long time. That's what you got to look at that stuff too. If you're Harbaugh, like, the Raiders just fired Pete Carroll after a year. Nobody's touching that with a 10-foot pole. That's going to be some new assistant or something. I heard on the Dan Patrick Show driving in after us here, driving into work yesterday, I think the Raiders are paying like $50 million for guys not to coach next year. On just like buyouts of contracts. Like, they don't know what the hell they're doing. John Harbaugh's not going there. The Giants are an organization, if nothing else, of some stability. They typically give their coaches some time to figure it out, right? And whether it works or doesn't work. So that to me makes the most sense. And then
I say Giants or Falcons or Cardinals.
You know, the Falcons are interesting too. The Falcons play in a division that is winnable. There's the Giants, though, is as much as I dislike them. That's a cherished job, I think. Parcells and Coughlin, and like they've had some. There's some history there with that job for sure. Playing in New York, it's the same region of the country he currently lives. I don't know how much that matters to him. He's old enough now where that probably doesn't matter that much. I think you just got to look at it at the roster and say, who gives us our best chance to go win a Super Bowl? The Giants probably have the biggest collection of good players of the teams, whether you believe in Jackson Dart or not. But the Falcons would maybe, the Falcons or the Cardinals, yeah, would be the next closest to that. But Harbaugh's been an unbelievable coach. He's won 61% of his games over 18 years. That's hard to do. He's won countless divisions. He's won a Super Bowl. They're in the playoffs a lot. And they're just always good. Like that stability, it reminds me of Andy Reid, right? They're just always good. Like you can just count on it. Their bad year this year was 8-9, not 2-14. It was 8-9 was a bad year for them. There are a lot of teams and franchises across the league that would love their bad years to be 8-9, right?
Yep.
He won't have Lamar Jackson, but he hasn't always had Lamar Jackson. He won a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco. So I think he becomes the top guy, and we just don't see this kind of thing happen all that often in the league, and somebody's going to be handed a golden gift, and it'll be John Harbaugh. And maybe the Ravens will end up better for it too, which my immediate reaction yesterday was not that. It was they're stupid. Yeah. I can't believe they did this. When I saw that maybe there was a rift, not a rift, but a disagreement about the future between he and Star, then it's like, okay, well, if it's not going to work, like you're banking on Lamar Jackson. You're not like, that's a, to me, a pretty easy decision as an organization. Like you tail that.
Yeah, you do. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting carousel. I don't know where everybody's going to end up in all this stuff, but you know, to see the big fish like that get dropped into the pond is going to shake everything up for sure. I think that there is going to be a lot of, you know, I've seen a lot of retread rumor. Like Robert Saleh's got an interview, and Matt Nagy obviously is one of them, and then Harbaugh, and then Stefanski. I mean, that's four or five former head coaches right there for six openings. Like there, it may be a lot of retread rather than up and coming.
It usually is. It usually is a lot of retread in the league. The league is full of trends. It's either, you know, for 2 years, it'll be Sean Payton. I mean, not Sean Payton, Sean McVay assistants, because that's what's cute and trendy. Like, or it'll be retreads, or it'll be, and a lot of the time, as annoying as the retreads can be, I mean, it works a lot of time. You know, John Harbaugh's working, Sean Payton's working. I'm going to guess retread is the trend because retread has seen recent success. So everyone that's watching some of these old guys go to new places and do well, they'll ignore the fact that it didn't work with Pete Carroll or Raheem Morris or some of the other retreads. And they'll say, well, yeah, let's go hire Jason Garrett. Made the joke yesterday, Titans. Jason Garrett and Matt Nagy are your top candidates?
Is that a truthful thing?
Yes. My joke was, is Nico Harrison running the Titans? Like, how can those be your top? Like, you better.
You know who's running the Titan? Former Chiefs assistant GM Mike Marganzi.
No, I didn't know that.
That's why they want to interview Spags and Nagy.
But okay, and it's nothing against Garrett or Nagy, but you've got a clean slate there. Like, take a shot, shoot your shot. Like, those are two of the most. Again, I don't mean offense because they could still be good somewhere, but those are two of the most boring candidate names I can think of. Like if you gave me a list and said, I want you to give me the most boring coaching hire you could make, somewhere in my top 5 to 10 would be Jason Garrett and Matt Nagy. Like somewhere in there.
Jason Garrett is an interesting hire just because it's like he's still a name that can – when's the last time he was a head coach? A decade ago?
Didn't Philip – did you tell him – was this a joke? Did I hear Philip Rivers?
Yeah, he's actually going to he like there's rumors that he's going to get interviews.
Hell yes. Let's go.
That'd be insane. First player ever to play in a game the year before he was a head coach. That'd be nuts.
We see the NBA do this with players all the time. Major League Baseball's been doing it a lot lately too. Like just get straight to the why not? Like if you can either smart enough to do it or you're not. Philip Rivers has been coaching other places too. It's like it's not like he's never coached anything. That's fine. Joey McGuire was a high school coach.
It's true.
Right.
I made the joke that if he gets hired places, that if I was a color commentator, I would say the stupidest jokes of all time. But like, this is the biggest game Philip Rivers has coached in since that game against South Central last year at homecoming.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty good. Matt Ryan trying to be a front office and he's trying to pull the Tom Brady.
I saw a joke about that. I think it was Schefter or Rappaport said something that he's considered widely the favorite to land the newly coined president of football operations. And it's like, you mean the job they created for him? He's the favorite for? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's but I think it's actually pretty interesting to see guys. Prime is a good example of taking a shot on a guy who hasn't had a ton of time actually coaching and be really successful with it. But Philip Rivers has coached, right? Like, you've got assistants with you. It's not like you're the only member of a staff. Like, there are, sure, there are parts you're going to have to get up to speed on, but yeah. Quarterbacks know the game as much as anybody from, like, they got to know what everybody does. So yeah. When you just think about like a strategy or a game plan, quarterback makes a lot of sense. There's just a lot of drama to deal with as a head coach. Are you ready for that? I suppose a player who's played recently would be equipped for that better than Andy Reid, who's three generations older than the current players, I guess. It's an interesting idea. I'll tell you, I'm far more interested in Philip Rivers as a candidate than I am Jason Garrett. What did Jason Garrett ever do? He was a backup quarterback. Here,
let me drop this nuke before the commercial break. Travis Kelce on possibly coming back for another season on New Heights. If my body can heal up, rest up, and I feel confident I can go out there and give another 18-20-week run, I think I would do it in a heartbeat.
All right, let's come back and talk about that next on Sports Daily.